Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports update.
Update from One Bills Drive, where the Bills announced that they have re-signed one of their key special teamers from a year ago. They're bringing back linebacker Deion Lacey, a one-year contract agreement. Lacey's played the last two seasons for the Bills, 32 games in all. He's 28 years old. He was third on the team in special teams tackles last year behind Saran Neal and Lafayette Pitts. Deion Lacey was an exclusive rights free agent. He has re-signed with the Buffalo Bills. Steelers general manager Kevin Colbert says that the Pittsburgh Steelers are unquestionably Ben Roethlisberger's team. He says Roethlisberger is the unquestioned leader of the Steelers locker room and has the freedom to publicly criticize teammates if he sees fit. That in response to questions after the Antonio Brown situation has gone big in Pittsburgh this last week. Biggest question for the Jacksonville Jaguars, the quarterback position. Jaguars president Tom Coughlin was asked about the future of Bortles yesterday. He says Blake is the quarterback with the Jaguars right now. And right now is the key to that response. The dangers of Lamar Jackson running too much, overrated, according to his offensive coordinator, Greg Roman, now the Ravens offensive coordinator. He says the whole danger thing is a little bit overrated. He plans on using Lamar Jackson running the football again in his second year in the league. Hockey news, the Sabres in Tampa tonight. They play the Lightning tonight at Tampa Bay. Face off at 7:30. Casey Mittelstadt has a point in each of his career road games against Tampa, including his first NHL goal on April 8th. The NHL trade deadline, 3 p.m. on Monday. This show will not be on Monday. The Hockey Instigator show will be a five-hour show starting at 10 a.m. on Monday. Duke freshman sensation Zion Williamson forced out of last night's game against North Carolina after just 36 seconds of play. Duke coach Mike Krzyzewski says it's a mild knee sprain. The Blue Devils lost to North Carolina last night, 88-72, the final score. And that's the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Steve Tasker in our One Buffalo studio, beginning hour number two. One of our favorite guests on the line with us right now, sports business expert, the host of the Business of Sports podcast, and a contributor on a weekly basis to mmqb.si.com. Happy to have Andrew Brandt on the line with us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Good afternoon, Andrew. Thanks for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Good afternoon. Good to be with you guys, as always.
Steve and I have been in a, I don't know if it's a heated discussion, but an intricate discussion about Zion Williamson and what it all means, what it means to the concept of amateurism in college sports. I'm just blown away by what a big deal this has become. People get injured all the time. Why are we having debates about the fairness of amateur standing for college basketball players? What do you think?
Yeah, I'm a little cynical today. It just seems like all these people come out of the woodwork.
Yeah.
It happened when Trevor Lawrence had a good game in the national championship, and people were like, wait a minute, he can't come out of college? Well, it's been the rule forever, and now people are realizing, wait, I don't know what they're thinking now. What, he's still in college? He could get paid? I don't know what all this is. The problem that people have, as I tweeted this morning, first of all, understand what the rules are. The rules are eligibility rules and have absolutely nothing to do with college sports. They have to do with pro sports. So the rule, you need a year removed from high school in the NBA and and 3 years removed from high school in football are not, I emphasize, not NCAA rules. They are NBA and NFL rules. They have nothing to do with colleges or conferences or schools. They have to do with pro sports.
Why are those rules in place, Andrew?
Because they were negotiated collectively.
Well, I know how they got there, but why are there? What was the rationale? Do you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question, because I remember back in the day when I was in Green Bay, Gene Upshaw used to come and do his annual visits, and we'd have a nice visit every, you know, I was an agent, I knew Gene, and I asked about that once, just like you asked me. And he just looked at me and he said, can you imagine a 19-year-old running into Ray Lewis?
Yeah.
And And you know, that sounds nice, but Jadeveon Clowney could run into Ray Lewis. I mean,
yeah. Right.
at 19. So I don't know why. I think that it's a co-opt between the union and the league to, pardon my French, screw the young players. Because who cares about them? I mean, where is their representation in collective bargaining? It's not.
Yeah.
So I always say this. The easiest issue in collective bargaining is rookies, right? They're going to fight about franchise tag and money, and they're going to fight about commissioner power, and they're going to fight about this. Let's just get the rookies out of the way and screw them.
Yeah,
I mean, that's
right.
Easy. That's easy.
Yeah, Andrew, can I offer this possible explanation for why that rule is in place? And I said this last hour to Steve. I don't want to sound jaded or cynical, but I think the leagues have an interest in protecting, a developmental device, both NBA and NFL, and B, I also think there's so much money at stake, so much TV money at stake, that they all kind of say, hey, let's keep this going. We're all making money. Networks, you're making money. Conferences, schools, you're making money. NFL and the NBA certainly are making enough money. I just think it's sort of it's economically driven by entities that want to see everybody continue to you know, cash in on the golden cow. What do you think?
Yeah. And listen, I'm going to sound like a shill here for college sports, because I am against the pay-per-play because of, to me, the issue is more equity among college athletes than worrying about the Zion Williamsons and the Johnny Manziels and the pick-a-name, Trevor Lawrence.
Right.
Those are the outliers. Gosh, I mean, everyone's like, you got to pay this guy. Well, or are you going to pay the third-string offensive lineman? I mean, are you going to pay the 14th man on the bench in college basketball? Are you going to pay women's athletes?
Yeah, that was
that
was my point too. Yeah, Andrew, you got to make rules for the entire group of players, and you've got guys that fall outside of that. You've got Zion Williamson. You've got and I mentioned a bunch of guys, Connie Hawkins and Daryl Dawkins, and these guys that have been outside the norm. You don't make the rules for those guys. You make the rules for everybody else. And those guys kind of fall out. Yeah, you can say Zion Williamson is maybe sacrificing 1 year of a pro deal because he has to play in the NCAA. But the rules are there for 99% of the players and athletes in Division I, right?
Right. And listen, I run a program, my day job, all my six jobs. I run a program at Villanova University. We have won two of the last three NCAA basketball championships. Two of the last three. That program makes maybe a couple million dollars. Okay? Two of the last three championships, maybe we made $1 million or $2 out of that program. College football makes a lot more, even if you're an average team. But in Villanova, we have 25 sports.
Right.
One makes money. One. So imagine paying 24 sports that are already in a deficit. And that's universal. It's not just here.
Right. Now, what would happen, though, I mean, that's the real problem, too, is it not, Andrew? Because if you do turn it loose like that, wouldn't universities like Alabama just say, hey, we've got two sports. We've got basketball. We've got football. We don't have a diving team, a baseball team. We don't have a field hockey team. They just, all those other sports would go to the wayside.
Well, that's the argument. And, you know, people who argue pay for play say, no, they won't. You'll just maybe, you wouldn't pay Nick Saban $12 million a year. You pay him $6 million a year.
Well, that's not enough money.
And then the question is, well, Nick Saban will go somewhere else for $12 million a year. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Well, I don't know what the answer is, but I do think a real question to ask about Zion Williamson. Say 8 months ago, he could have gone to a G League or something like that for like $100,000. $100,000. Do you think he'd go to G League or he'd go to Duke?
I get it. I'm totally with you. I'm totally with you.
I think he'd go to Duke.
I agree.
I think he'd turn down $100,000 and go to Duke, and I think all those Duke guys would.
Why is that? Why is that, Andrew? Why do you believe that?
Because I think Duke basketball is a bigger brand than G League, and I also say this. What if he was a high school, came out, and got drafted by Orlando or Sacramento? I think he'd rather go to Duke.
Yeah, well, there you go. That's a good point, too. And I agree with you. I don't want to ask you, too, after we put this kind of this, we fix the NCAA problem. I got something else I want to ask you, too. Colin Kaepernick settled his suit with the NFL. What are the ramifications of that? And I know nobody knows the amount of the settlement, but do you think now that that has all happened and come to its fruition, do you think teams are going to be more willing to sign him, or what do you think the ripple effect is?
Steve, I don't think he'll ever sign. And I think the owners would rather pay him as I would guess like a third string than sign him. And I'm guessing, this is just total guess, that the settlement is basically like $30 million, $1 million a team, which is what a third stringer costs, a quarterback. So they're basically, each team's paying him like a third stringer to not have to sign him. So, you know, I think that they paid him off, and I don't think he'll ever play again. He may play in another league. But listen, I'm more surprised Colin Kaepernick settled than the NFL settled. I really am.
Why?
Because this was a mission that they felt they had real evidence for, and to expose the NFL for something that is untoward and something that is racist or something that is prejudicial. And I am in no way saying Colin Kaepernick is not someone to be looked up to for taking a stand. But I'm surprised he went for the money rather than pursue something he thought was real. And he'd been in pursuit of it for now 2 years. And from the NFL's point of view, I'm sure the lawyers got up in front of him and said, guys, I don't think we have a smoking gun, but we don't want all this out there, you know, when discovery starts next month. So I get it from the NFL. And you're right, Steve, we're never going to know the money, and anything that's leaked out there is probably not going to be true. So we'll never know what he settled for.
Could Kaepernick argue that he made his case successfully and that his chances of having a meaningful playing career have now gone by the wayside because so many years have elapsed? I mean, could that be the motivation for Kaepernick?
Yeah, I mean, I keep going back to the old idea of distraction. And, you know, look at Antonio Brown. Steelers or another team will have Antonio Brown in their roster. Kareem Hunt just signed. For a frontline player, teams will deal with distraction. For a down-the-line player, they won't.
Right.
And it could be Colin Kaepernick, it could be Tim Tebow, it could be Michael Sam. They're not going to deal with it for a second or third stringer. And that's what Kaepernick is in everybody's eyes. You know, take apart everything else, take everything else out of the equation. Talent-wise, he's seen as a backup.
Right.
That's right. He is.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's the only reason that they don't sign him. I don't know about collusion. I don't know whatever. I know this. There's a lot of owners out there. It doesn't matter who colludes with them. You can't tell them what to do. They're going to do whatever they want. Right. So I don't know how you prove collusion in that case. But nevertheless, they settled it. And as you knew it would, eventually the league moves on. And you've got right. Le'Veon. What do you make? We've been talking about it for the last couple of days. Le'Veon Bell set out this year. And now Antonio Brown wants a trade and probably is going to get it. The Steelers seem like a hot mess. Where do you think Le'Veon Bell is going to land? And after all said and done, is it going to be worth it for him to have sat out this last year financially?
You know, I've been saying all year there's no way Le'Veon Bell made a good decision. He's not going to make up $14.5 million. I still don't know why he did it. I was wrong every week for 17 weeks. I said he'd come back for $885,000 a week as an agent. I was an agent. I could never advise a client to do that, especially a running back. And I just don't see it. I don't see a team breaking the bank on Le'Veon Bell. You know, people always line up teams like the Jets that have big cap room, and I don't see the Jets doing that. I don't see any team doing that. The Colts seem happy with their cheap running backs. A lot of teams do. And I'm not saying no one will sign Le'Veon Bell, but to think he's going to get a Todd Gurley plus contract, I don't see it. And I see no business sense of what he did last year, even if he got hurt. even if he got hurt, he would have gotten paid. Like, Earl Thomas got paid. And Le'Veon Bell did not. And they're both free agents right now.
Right.
Andrew Brandt, sports business expert on the line with us, and the other Steeler, Antonio Brown. You mentioned a moment ago, Andrew, about how teams will not pay big money for a potential distraction. At age 30, with what the way his season ended in Pittsburgh last year, where does Antonio Brown come down on that line? Is he a potential distraction that might prevent teams from being interested in him in a possible trade?
Yeah, I mean, listen, guys, I'm out here lonely on a lonely island saying that Antonio Brown's still going to be a Steeler.
Really?
And the reason I say it is because as someone who managed a cap for 10 years, to see a $21 million cap hole for a guy no longer on the team, that would drive me so crazy. And that's what it would happen if they trade him. No matter what they got back, he'd be counting $21 million. That debilitates your team right there. The other thing is he himself has really made him, in my mind, untradeable, because who wants that, right? Like, who's going to sit around with GM in a front and a coach, sit around in their office today and say, we really want to bring that on our team? No, nobody wants that. Right. I understand the talent, but when the Steelers go out to the market, and I'm still not sure they are going out to the market. Maybe they're listening. They're going to be hearing, in my mind, they're going to be hearing things like fourth-round pick.
Right.
Maybe third. I mean, are you going to give up Antonio Brown for that? I don't know.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting, too, that it's the same kind of mentality that all the people used to say about Kaepernick, that was going to be a distraction and all of that, and it's the same argument they're using about Antonio Brown, about him, a guy who can turn it on and shut it off and become – a problem just with a decision, and you have no control over that decision. So it is a little bit of a risk. I had one more thing I wanted to bring up with you, and this will be my last topic. The AAF got a big infusion of cash this week from, I believe it's Tom Dundon. What do you think that means for its future, if anything?
Well, yeah, first give me a chance to plug my podcast, The Business of Sports. With Andrew Brandt, a recent guest 2 weeks ago, AAF founder Charlie Ebersole. And as founders are, he was very bullish about the league, and I did ask a lot about investment. And you can hear it on my podcast. He talked about Silicon Valley. He talked about former NFL players. He talked about former NFL management. He talked about the Chernin Group, which owns Barstool Sports. And to me, you walk away from that like, yeah, they're really well-funded. But then the news you just talked about, which really was shocking. Shocking in a good way for the league, that they got $250 million. That'll float them at least a year or two. And then shocking that they needed it. I don't get it. After talking to him and then you hear about payroll issues week one, I was shocked. But now this guy's the chairman of the league. Who knows what percent of the league he owns? He is that white whale everyone looks for in growing a business, and he believed in it. So kudos to them for bringing him in. By the way, you know, those people listening who are investors, they can tell better than I can how diluted those existing partners are right now with this guy taking over the whole league.
Yeah. Right.
So I don't know if that prior investment's any good right now. So it seems like this guy is the white knight, and the league's going to be healthy for a while, but shocking they needed him.
Yeah, and I just have one question on this topic too, Andrew. Two things, actually. They're on TV, but this to me was a signal that they're not making any meaningful money on TV. The second thing is, how much of this is geared up for the eventual, many people believe, the eventual legalized gambling portion that the Alliance seems to be well positioned to take advantage of with their app and some of their other things. Do you think that's what they're trying to do? Stay alive until they generate this new income somehow from legalized gambling?
Yeah, I mean, Ebersole talked about this app a lot that I don't think has really come online yet, but gambling's a big part of it. You know, and then got great reviews week one, as you saw, with the transparency of the replay. Those are the things they can do with the NFL product, make it better, make it more tantalizing for younger viewers, especially a shorter product, a running clock, 2.5 hours versus 3.5 hours. That's all good. ultimately, they're not going to match week one ratings probably. And as you mentioned, the buy, the NFL Network buy, I think is not a buy. I think it's just putting it on TV for them and the NFL Network having some programming. So, yeah, this is not – they're not making big money, any money out of the broadcast side, I don't think. And then the attendance issue. I mean, San Antonio's drawn like bonkers, but the rest of them, I wonder.
Yeah.
So, listen, the last comment is we go into every league thinking there's no way they'll survive. This one now has a chance because of this guy Dundon.
Yeah.
Andrew, thanks for this. Every time you're on, I think to myself, you cannot really follow sports in today's America without following sports business, and you do it better than anybody. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much. Take care.
Appreciate it, Andrew.
Andrew Brandt is our sports business expert, the host of his Business of Sports podcast. He talked about that in the interview he did with Charlie Ebersol about the Alliance of American Football. Also is a regular contributor, weekly column for mmqb.si.com. I feel better now about the Zion Williamson situation after hearing him talk about it. I just feel like he's right. He's right. You know, they're again, I'm back to my
outliers.
Fundamentally corrupt. Zion Williams is certainly an outlier in terms of talent and ability to generate money. But I do think that he sort of crystallized, Steve, the fact that college basketball and college football, the two big pillars of American college sports, are kind of they're built on business. It's not about the colleges. It's not about the kids. It's not about the players. It's not about the athletes. It's certainly not about student athletes. It's about generating money from television. And that's and as he said, those are league rules, NBA rules, and NFL rules. We knew that, mm-hmm. that kind of regulate who is able to play and who has how long you have to stay. And until somehow that changes, and there's no incentive for it to change,
right.
We're going to have to live with this. I guess that's that's a bargain that I made with myself a couple of years ago when I came to the conclusion that college sport, there's something really wrong with college sports.
And it's interesting, too, because there's a couple of points about what you said. One, there's no incentive to change the NFL rule because nobody negotiates on behalf of guys that aren't in the league yet.
That was a really good point that Andrew made.
Yes. Nobody cares about the guys who aren't in the league
the
yet.
Unborn, they don't care.
And secondly, the fact that the outliers are the ones that bring it into stark focus. Like guys like Zion Williams, yeah, he's different. And the rules are made to, you know, to protect the masses. And he made a great point about Villanova. They've won two out of the last three national championships. The big sports money generating games and teams fund the minor sports.
Yeah.
They provide scholarships to the rest of the student athletes that can attend on scholarships, like they for the baseball team, for the field hockey team, for the women's team, for all the other stuff that doesn't that are taking losses. They're funded by those big time sports teams. So there is some good that comes out of it. It's not just going into somebody's pocket. It does go back to some of the students in the school.
I will say this, and I mentioned this briefly to you in our opening segment. A year ago, when it came, it was just about a year ago now, right before the NCAA tournament, the FBI had been investigating college basketball corruption at various schools, Arizona.
Right, it was a big one.
It was big. And here we are a year later, and nothing has changed. Because I remember thinking a year ago, all right, this is it. Somebody's going to have to come in and clean out college basketball. Nothing happened.
Yeah.
Nothing happened. I mean, Sean Miller in trouble at Arizona, a couple of other schools. The investigation is not complete, but still, nothing changes. Fundamentally changes because of the money. That's what I believe.
Right. And it's frustrating, too, because what happens? They shuffle some people around. He goes to this school. That AD's gone. He's at this school now. That. Nothing changes. They just change chairs.
Yep. All right. Am I being told that Deion Lacey might join us now in the next couple of minutes? Yes, I am. I'm excited.
You're being told that. We've been told that before. Let me just remind you of half an hour.
That might happen when we come back. Come on back. One Bills Live, presented by Kalida Health from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. Come back. John Murphy, Steve Tasker here in Orchard Park. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. We're presented by Kalida Health. One little bit of Bills news today. Linebacker Deion Lacey, one of Buffalo's preeminent special teamers, has signed a one-year contract. That came out today. And Deion Lacey is on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline with us right now. Deion, congratulations. Where are you calling from, Alabama? You're home in Alabama today?
Yes, I'm home in Alabama. How you doing this afternoon?
Congratulations.
Doing good. Congratulations, man. That's awesome.
Thanks.
You've found an NFL home here now, and it'll be 3 years coming up for you, Deion. Talk about what went into this decision to sign up for another year with the Bills.
Basically, I told my agent, you know, I wanted to stay with the Bills. I didn't want to go anywhere else. I like what the Buffalo Bills organization has going on with the team and with the staff, and I want to be a part of it.
We talked, Murph and I, kind of laughingly that the Bills finished the season 6-10. It's not a really good win-loss year. A lot of things, you know, you'd love to have a huge amount of more wins than that. I mean, you got to be disappointed. Yeah. But by the same token, this may be one of the most optimistic franchises about their future in the league. Is that what's happening in the locker room? Do you guys feel that way?
We're way better than 6-10. The guys, they want to win. That's what I love about the Buffalo Bills team. Everybody comes to work every day to get better and to win. And, you know, we didn't get what we wanted at the end of the year, but we know what we have in the locker room. It don't show on the record, but we know what we have.
I was wondering, Dion, with, obviously 6 wins last year, not the record people are looking for, and things change. The special teams leadership has changed. They have Heath Farwell now as a new special teams coordinator. Have you talked with the new special teams coordinator, and have you had much thought about what might change for you and the other special teamers?
I haven't had the chance to talk with them yet. Maybe when I get up to Buffalo, we might have a conversation about what's going to happen with the special teams, but I'm eager to learn from them and eager to get started with them.
You were part of one of those guys that played through this new transition for the new kickoff rules. What did you guys think of the new kickoff and what it looks like and how it came how it came about on the field? What did you guys think of the new kickoff rules?
Everything was fine. You know, we don't get the 5-yard start off, but my thing was, the only issue that I had when the flag got thrown on me was our back foot has to stay down through the kick. We can't have our back foot up. And, you know, that kind of had me hesitant on when to take off and when to time up the kick. So I had to reprocess my mind frame on that and make sure my back foot stayed down. Other than that, the kickoff is great.
Yeah, did you notice that not very many kickoff returns happened until, well, late in the year we started to see them a little bit more. What did you guys think about late in the year when you started actually having to cover these kicks?
Guys was eager and happy to have the opportunity to make plays. Early in the year, you know, you don't really have a lot of, you know, wins and things of that nature. Once it got late in the season, we had that on our side, so guys, you know, cover kicks, which is what they love to do on special teams. And make plays.
Dion, what's your favorite special teams unit to play on? What do you like doing?
Kickoff.
Really? Why?
That's the tone setter.
Even with the new rules, you can still set a tone, go down there and do something?
Yeah. If the opportunity presents itself, the Buffalo Bills unit, hey, we're coming for it.
How do you set the tone? Is it field position, a big hit, all of the above? What do you think? What's the best way to set the tone on a kickoff?
The best way to set the tone on the kickoff is the field position. It don't have to be a big hit. If a big hit comes, you know, take it. But if we have an opportunity to pin the opposite team inside the 20, we'll take it every time.
Yeah, and I've always said, Dion, maybe you can – I said the world would be a better place if everybody got to cover a kickoff once a week.
Why is that?
I don't know.
It's a great way to take your aggressions out, and it's good. It's nice. It's good physical meditation, I think. We just want to congratulate you on the new contract. We look forward to seeing you here at training camp. What's the next thing for you for OTAs and that kind of thing? When will you next be in Buffalo?
I'll probably be in Buffalo late March.
I come
back early, so.
Yeah, that's a couple weeks early, I think, from when you're required to be here, huh? Or asked
yes,
to be
sir.
Here anyway. What do you do yes, from sir. Now until then? What's your off season been like, Dion?
My off season has been spending time with the kids and doing mostly small muscle workouts, get my muscle memory up, muscle endurance. So when I get ready to get in with the team and run around and get back in the defensive playbook, it'll be fun.
You know, I was thinking about, and we do want to let you go, but my partner, Steve here, his son plays in the Canadian Football League for Hamilton. How many years now, Steve? 6 years?
Six or seven, yeah, something like that.
And Dion, you played 3 years, right, in Edmonton. Would you have been able to make it in the NFL now on your third year with the Buffalo Bills if not for those 3 years with the Edmonton Eskimos?
That played a big part in getting me back to the NFL to, you know, build my resume and get my name out there, let everyone know who I am and what I can bring to the table.
You won a Grey Cup. What city was the Grey Cup in when you won that in 2015?
Winnipeg and Minnesota.
Oh yeah, and I remember it's yeah, cold. It was cold. Who'd you play? Who was your opponent?
Ottawa Redblacks.
Right. Yeah.
Played against Henry. Father Time.
Yeah, he finally called it quits at 42. Yeah, that's great. Congratulations. That was great. And I tell you, you know, with my son being up there, I've watched a lot of Canadian football. It's a much different game. Is there anything you wish that the NFL would do that the Canadian Football League does?
Put the no fair catch rule in for special teams so they have to return the ball.
I like that. Would you keep the 5-yard halo rule?
Nah, I make it down to 3.
Yeah, that's
right. It feels smaller, so 3 yards.
That's what I'm talking about.
Hey, Dion, again, congratulations. Thanks for spending a few minutes with us here today, and we'll see you up here in a couple of weeks.
All right, thanks.
Thanks. Dion Lacy, Bills special teamer, agreed to terms today on a 1-year contract. It'll be his third season with the Bills. He's played 16 games in each of the first 2 years here. No starts, mostly special teams work. Loves covering kicks. What was your favorite unit?
Kickoff is always
more fun than punt. Yeah. Why more fun than punt coverage?
Well, for me, I didn't have two guys beating me up all the way down the field and from the snap, and then kickoff, you have more space to run around, and move, and make plays, and you knew it was much more simple, and much more physical, you know, play because it was all more read and react. It wasn't so much punt team. You've got a little more responsibility than you do on kickoff.
I'm sure this may sound like a stupid question, but I'm not afraid to ask stupid questions. I'm sure you have rules and plays on kick coverage, you know, schemes, stuff that you try to do, but a lot of it, I would think, is just instinctive open field reaction, right? What you see?
It is. You do have some responsibilities, and you can do anything you want on kickoff, which is why kickoff's a lot of fun. You can do anything you want, be very creative, as long as you know your responsibility. And for me, for instance, one of the things I did, I would line up on to the right of the kicker, next to the end, close to the sidelines, but not the end line. And my responsibility was to keep the returner inside me. I couldn't let him go to my right. I had to keep him on my left, and I had to turn him back to my teammates, right? That was contained, they call it.
Why would you be contained and not the far outside?
Because
guy?
He would drop off, and he'd be safety. He would drop off and be the last line of defense. And if the guy got through, he was there ready for it. He would just kind of snuggle up and make sure that he would, you know, if the guy looked like he was going to break it, he would be where the open spot was and make the tackle. He was a safety. So I was the last guy on the end as we covered the kick. And it was a lot of fun because I could do anything I wanted as long as that guy didn't run out around me.
Off your shoulder.
And it was very simple. And it's a great way to, you know, a great way to make a living, Murph. I got to tell you, you should try it. I'm telling you. Covering kicks is awesome.
Ronnie Wolfley, right? Great special teamer.
One of the all-time greats.
I interviewed him once, and he got talking about pretty much the same thing, how every American man would benefit from covering a kickoff. He said, I don't care. You can wear your suits and ties and bring a briefcase, but it would be great if you could cover one kickoff. He's got a hilarious.
There'd be no road rage.
Yeah.
And none of that stuff would ever happen. You'd be, you know, because you get rid of all that in your kickoff. You can jump in. And it's a lot of fun. Plus, you're running as, you know, and you're young and in shape too, right? So you're flying down the field and you can confront guys. You can fool them. You can beat them physically. You can run over them or you can run around them. You can juke them and make them, you know, go around.
Is that all gone now with the kickoff rules?
It's not like it was.
We're going to sound like a couple of old guys, but kickoffs used to be a lot more fun.
Yeah, they were dangerous too. I mean, I got, yeah, you know, you
that
get
was part of the fun.
Yeah, it is part of it. It's fun to be the guy ringing them up, not the guy that's, you know, getting rung up. It was dangerous, no question about it. It was a little bit like all sport. It was, you know, life is a risk. And I always felt extremely safe covering kicks. I really did. I thought it was a great, it was so much fun to play, and it's kind of feel like you convince yourself that's what you were born to do. You know, so I agree with him. Kickoffs are a blast. They really are. And I was really relieved when I went to that kickoff summit during the off season this last year. The league is really committed to keeping it in the game, and for good reasons. Not just the fact that it's fun, but it also, if they start changing a game drastically because this play is too dangerous, well, let's just make it less dangerous. Because if you take that play out, then the natural conversation goes to, okay, what's the next most dangerous play? Well, then you got to take that one out. And then,
you know, and then it's 7-on-7 and we're in shorts and t-shirts, you know, and it's no fun. So they're going to keep it in the game, and the game's going to continue to be a big physical game played by big, scary guys, and it's a blast to have it that way.
Hey, we thank Dion Lacey for joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, presented by Subway Restaurants, proud to be locally owned and operated. Talking about the Buffalo defense today, whatever you'd like to talk about is open for discussion, by the way. But if you'd like to talk about the defense and talk about who the breakout player is, that's our Twitter poll. Who will be the breakout player on defense for the Bills in 2019? We've got about 750 votes in on this so far. And overwhelmingly, 72% of you say the breakout player on defense for the Bills will be Tremaine Edmonds going into his second year. 12% of you say it'll be Shaq Lawson. 9% say it'll be cornerback Levi Wallace. Just 7% have somebody else in mind. Give us a call. Let's discuss. 803-0550, toll free 1-888-550-2550. Or whatever else you'd like to talk about. Zion Williamson and his issue. We talked about that a lot at the top of the show and with Andrew Brandt. Everything's on the table. Come on back. Let's discuss. John Murphy, Steve Tasker, One Bills Live, presented by Kalina Health from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. Steve and I spent the break talking about Sabres hockey. You going to watch tonight there, Stevie?
You betcha.
You have high hopes for this game? Sabres at Tampa, 7:30 tonight.
You go right to the heart of the matter, don't you?
What do you expect, though? Well, I mean,
Tampa's the best team in the league.
Yeah.
So it's certainly a yardstick. I want to see what they do. I want to see them compete. And you know, we were having two. If they win, it's going to be one of those games where after the game, they're all going to say, hey, nobody believed in us except us. It's going to be, you know, we banded together. This is what we got in this room. This is the kind of character we've got in this room. And then the next, you know, and then they go on a 3-game losing streak again, you know?
Well, it gets me to the
that's the roller coaster we're on with this team.
Yeah, how much hope do you have for this game and the rest of the season?
I always have hope for this. You know, this game I always have hope for. Big picture, I don't know. I'm not so optimistic. But this game, sure, let's go. Let's see what you got.
7:30 tonight, Sabres and Tampa Bay in Tampa Bay. The fifth-ranked Michigan Wolverines are in action tonight, in case you were looking for an alternative.
Yeah, who are they playing?
They are playing at Minnesota. They beat Minnesota a couple of weeks ago, three or four weeks ago.
Is that the Senior Bowl? Did they beat them, by 40?
Two.
By two?
It was a tough one. They got a shot at the buzzer from Charles Matthews, beat Minnesota. I got criticized on Twitter for the other day for talking too much Michigan basketball.
They must be crushing you today.
I just went 15 seconds. Hey, why don't you talk about Nate Oates and the UB Bulls? They're great. They're nationally ranked as well.
Yeah.
Love
what
it.
Are they I've now? What couple, are they now, Nate?
25th, I believe.
Nice.
Yeah. I've been to a couple of UB games this year.
For the first time in over 10 years, I attended a UB Bulls game this year.
Yeah. You're a front runner. We all know that.
I am totally a bandwagon jumper.
Yeah. What do you think?
It was fun, too. It was a good game. Good atmosphere.
Who's going to be the breakout player for the Buffalo Bills defensively this year? Give us a call. Let's discuss. Got a call on the line, not about this topic, from Brian. Brian, go ahead. You're on the air with us.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good.
That's good. Several years back, I got one of the old Buffalo Bills press guide where they, you know, go over, you know, past games and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
They had a preseason game Buffalo play, I think, in 1962. And, Steve, since you were talking about your son playing in the Canadian Football League, I believe they played a preseason game against the Hamilton Tiger Cats in a preseason. And I was just kind of wondering if guys can research or find out how they played the game, because Canadian football rules are different as opposed to the NFL rules.
Well, that's a good question. And I know that they did play that game. Have you ever heard that, Steve?
I have not.
Preseason game against the Tie Cats, I believe in Canada, right? In Hamilton, right, Brian?
I don't know if it was there or it was here, but I know they played against the Tiger Cats, you know, back when Buffalo was just being, you know, starting out. And I believe the Tiger Cats won that game, but I don't know anything. I couldn't find anything, how they played it, what rules they played or what.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't have any information about it either. It kind of rings a bell on the horizon of my mind, like I've crossed paths with it before thinking about it. But, no, I don't know anything about that game.
No, I'm going to say if you guys maybe could research it or something and find out.
Well, we'll have somebody on it now. I'm sure we got somebody in the back room who's frantically typing away.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
If I could turn my computer on, I'd look it up.
I'm looking. I don't have the preseason results in front of me, but that's I know they played, and I'm not sure what rules they played under. That's an interesting question. I wonder how that came about. What do you think? We need a preseason game. Hamilton needs one. Typically, CFL preseason, at least now, is over, right?
Right.
I mean, the season starts in what, July? CFL regular season?
No, it's over. It starts May 1st, and it goes. They have three bye weeks, 18 regular season games, and the Grey Cup is always played on Thanksgiving weekend.
So when did they start regular season?
2 weeks at May, mid-May, June 1st regular for season. Sure. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
They go fast. That's why we camp with my son in the wintertime because we can't do it in the summertime.
Oh, that's why.
See, that's why.
Yeah. All right, we'll look into that. We'll see if we can find something out about that, Brian. Thank you. We got one more hour to go. We're going to talk with Greg Rosenthal, NFL.com writer, co-host of the Around the NFL podcast, a variety of NFL issues for Greg Rosenthal. When we come back, you come back as well, Greg Rosenthal. It is One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.